present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz, the show with more current affairs than Michael Aspel. Bit saucy, say no more. Before we meet the teams, we say hello to Brian Perkins, who has this juicy snippet for us.
Trading Standards officials have stopped a new drink, 97.7% of which comes from a cow, from being called milk or having any dairy-style name. Northern Dairies, which produces the drink, cannot even put a picture of a cow on the carton. Marketing manager Alex Robertson said, "We wanted to call it semi-skim milk, but we were stopped by the milk marketing rules. They said we'd be misleading people that it came from a cow. In the end, we replaced the picture of cows with a couple of churns. If they ask, we'll say the farmer keeps his potatoes in them."
Well, now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Miles Kington. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Pete McCarthy. We launch into the first round with this cutting from The Times.
A topless takeaway shop that outraged women's groups has also angered McDonald's. The fast food chain has threatened legal action unless McTits, where staff in see-through aprons serve food, drops the Mac prefix.
I agree, it's outrageous using Mc. But we thank H. Margolis of Letchworth for sending us that. Richard, your first question. Whose unimpeachable record is now all water under the gate?
This is a very bad taste reference, I think, to the late President Nixon.
It is.
Yeah. Who inspired Mr. Major, I think, with the thought that, you know, you could be disgraced and dead and you could still be revered as a great leader. I think you have to be dead first, don't you?
Yes.
Die.
I think that's it. Despite Tricky Dicky's fall from grace, both Presidents Ford and Reagan claimed they had based most of their policy decisions on advice from him. Isn't that typical, blaming a man when he can't answer back? He was also described as a statesman of great integrity and wisdom by President Clinton and her husband. Compared to them, he could just about qualify. Miles, your question now. Where did long columns line up for Nelson's poll?
Is it as simple as I think it is?
Yes. I'm not going to give you any kind of verbal clue whatsoever. thank you. They are radio first.
Well, it's the first election in history which is spread over 3 days, and the people who are too old to vote go in on the first day. I don't know who goes on the second or third day, but they go. And it's such a democratic process that they're referring to President Mandela before voting has started.
I like this idea of sticking photographs of the politicians, little pictures of them, on the ballot paper. We could bring that in over here and you could do a sort of false moustache and glasses on them and little horns, perhaps. Or I think that's an innovation.
Spoiling the ballot paper would take on a new meaning.
In our case, it would be improving the ballot papers. However, this is South Africa, which went to the polls to rid itself of hundreds of years of right-wing oppression. Nelson Mandela's first call of congratulation was from John Smith, who also wanted to know how he'd done it. The historic events were tempered, however, by the sad news that England has yet another cricket team to be thrashed by. But now we welcome Pete with this. Who went Deutsch on the happy homeless?
This would be a reference to that little chap, what's he called, who's on television sometimes and has a soapbox in the park occasionally. And he went in, was it Der Spiegel in Germany, Mr. Major? And he pointed out that all the homeless people in London are only there because it's a lifestyle choice. Because, in fact, there are plenty of empty houses in the country, more empty houses than homeless people, as we all already know. So they've just chosen to be there. So more good press for the country over there. And then he decided not to give him mad cow beef when he came to Chequers, which was another place.
Very good. This refers to John Major, who turned his hand to the subject of homelessness and proved that when it comes to versatility, there's no end to his limitations. He told the German magazine Der Spiegel that many British people actually like to become homeless and jobless. Or did they say Johnless? If people are happy to lose their job and their house, then he should be a beaming little ray of sunshine himself before too long. The Prime Minister also told Der Spiegel that European unity didn't mean surrendering sovereignty, but merely pooling it, rather than like the example set by Poland when they had their sovereignty pooled in 1939. And talking of the homeless...
Deluxe all-weather kennel, 7 feet 6 inches by 3 feet, porch entrance and separate sleeping area will accommodate two or three medium-sized dogs on 3-inch rubber casters.
Thank you, Audrey Franks of Leicestershire, for sending us that from the Leicester Mercury. Alan, now, will you please listen to this? Well, that was supposed to be a clue.
Is that President Peron who was buried this week, another great and good man and sorely missed?
That is the clue, the fall on the hill. And the question is, whose detractors ruefully got on top of him?
Oh, this is Paul McGregor.
It is.
It is very unfair. As Richard would say, he's suffered enough. He's a man who wants to put toll in the middle of Britain once he's turned all of it into a 14,000-lane M25. And as a result of this, is actually the M11. And people climbed up onto McGregor's roof and unrolled a road. Rolled down his roof and he was shaving and it came down over his bathroom window. And being a member of the Conservative cabinet, it took him about 3 hours to wonder why it had gone dark.
The action has prompted fears of copycat protests against other ministers, except Virginia Bottomley, of course, as she's completely roofless. And the scores at the end of the first round are, unsurprisingly, for all. We open round two with a romantic tale from the Daily Telegraph.
A frail woman of 75 who enticed more than 100 young men into her garden by pretending to be a sex-hungry air stewardess was given a suspended jail sentence yesterday. She told the men via a telephone answering system that she was 34-year-old Marianne and ready for anything to satisfy their desires, a court heard at Rødovre, west of Copenhagen, at the weekend. When the men had stripped by night in front of an illuminated white sheet so she could judge them on their merits, she appeared in a nurse's uniform with her adopted son dressed as a male nurse and demanded to know what they were doing there. She then threatened to call the police or agreed to keep quiet for £50. Eight people paid up.
Well done, Brian. And many thanks to Ian Fulton of Wolverhampton for that one.
Did she offer them boiled sweets to suck while they came down?
No. Come to another round, and it's Richard Cern again. Richard, what news from Milad appealed to Milady?
In the courts, yes. I think... The advance of feminism is such that there is now one woman judge, who is the sister of the late Lord Havers, who was the Lord Chancellor, remember. Nothing to do with that, the fact that she got made a judge. It was nothing to do with the fact that she was the Lord Chancellor's sister. Anyway, it has now been decreed by somebody or other that she can be referred to as Mrs. Lord Justice.
As Milady.
Milady, yes, of course, yes. Is it right?
Yes. I should know. It's written down here.
That's very good.
It refers to the Court of Appeal, which has reformed its ancient procedures to allow a Lord Justice to become Milady. The decision comes after years of extensive lobbying by Parker from Thunderbirds.
Milady.
The decision was welcomed by Britain's forward-looking male judges, who have since launched a campaign to secure the vote for women. This reform is actually part of a policy to simplify judicial titles. It really is quite basic. In court, the judge is known as Milad. In the Pink Pussycat Club, Soho is known simply as Fifi. Miles, who went to court and carried the can?
Oh, my God, yes. His name is John Butler, I think.
Yes.
He was a juror who turned up...
That's right.
...rather the worse for lager... And had a tussling bout with a judge over whose lager it was. And the judge said, I'm having that. And he said, you buy your own, mate. And he was promptly arrested for being drunk in charge of a jury.
Absolutely right. This is juror John Butler, who was thrown out of court after he was found to be unfit by reason of drink. That's the legal term of being as rumpled as a newt. Butler aroused the suspicion of the judge by asking if the case could be adjourned while he popped out for a kebab. Ordered to approach the bench, Butler produced a can of beer from the front of his trousers. He was then charged with the possession of a concealed widget. With all the rumpus, the judge shouted, "Order, order," to which Butler replied, "Another pint and a packet of crisps." Meanwhile, talking of sticky situations...
A woman who could not bear to be separated from her husband superglued herself to him after visiting him in jail in Newton Abbot, Devon. The jail's medical team separated them with hot soapy water.
That was sent in by Mr. C. Farmer, who spotted that, ironically enough, in The Independent. Pete, here's some music for you. And that was I Want to Hold Your Hand by Balsara and his singing sitar.
I was just
thinking
that. I thought that'd be the question.
Your question is, who might have preferred an off-the-cuff delivery?
Ah, yes. Could this refer to the bizarre story of the woman who gave birth in handcuffs? In some sort of prison or institution this week.
Well, it was a hospital, that's...
Yes. Well, yes, that's what I meant, of course. So when she was... she had about 15 minutes to go before the child was delivered, so they put her on the bed in handcuffs. And she said that she was straining to lift herself from the bed and couldn't reach the bars on the side of the bed. Proof, of course, that she was in fact planning to escape, would have plummeted through the window and made her get away by concealing herself in the crowd... with a partially delivered baby, I suppose.
This example of giving birth in handcuffs was pronounced a legal first, although there are said to be few occasions when people have tried conceiving in them. Alan, what knickers have to cough up? Old story,
I hope we can now use it. I
hope
Pete's one, when I heard that music, was going to be about Paddy Ashdown. Are we having Paddy Ashdown?
No, we're not. What has Paddy done?
His hand is strapped up, isn't it? It's the audience excited by this. he's been using his right hand far too much. And please.
Strained wrist, hasn't he?
He's got repetitive stress syndrome. Mm. Well, we knew the Liberal Democrats. And mine, on the other hand, is about something else.
It is.
Mine is about Gibson, Mrs. Gibson, who had most of the Bank of England down her knickers.
That's right.
This is a wonderful story. It's that thing on the front of a note that says, I promise to pay the bearer, and if you turn up, they actually will pay you. Anyway, she turned up with 350,000 friends at that furnace where they get rid of all our old pound notes. And she wasn't actually charged with anything criminal. I couldn't understand this, despite being legal brain. I mean, I couldn't understand why she wasn't. And the Bank of England sued her for the return of the money. And they're going to get it back.
They went in to where all the old pound notes were and stuck them down their knickers and in their bras and then went to the building society with all the money in a big sack. I mean, it was foolproof.
And the way in which they actually got them...
I blame the Leeds Building Society for this. The court heard how Christine Gibson concealed over £250,000 in her underwear. She tried stashing pound coins, but gave up after it took her 3 weeks to walk home. Scores are still tied. It's 8-8. Open round three with this.
Travel staff working in Nottingham's Thomas Cook have compiled a collection of British translation howlers which they're displaying in their shop. The gems seem to cover all eventualities, such as the lift is being fixed. During that time, we regret you will be unbearable. A sign in a Bucharest hotel lobby. And the flattening of underwear with pleasure is the job of the chambermaid. A Hong Kong dentist advertises teeth extracted by the latest Methodists. while a Swiss restaurant menu proudly states, "Our wines leave you with nothing to hope for."
Keep going, you're on a roll. Thank you, Michael Robinson, and the Yorkshire Post for that. Richard, your question again. In deference to your incisive grasp of the week's news, as always, can you explain for us, please, the subatomic relationship of particulate matter to protons and neutrons and their effect upon the construction of the electron nucleus? Actually, it's got a logical answer.
Has it?
The high-speed electron joke.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This is the week's most interesting story. Interesting, that is, to readers everywhere of Quantum Mechanics Weekly, incorporating Subatomic Particle Gazette. It's the recreation of the subatomic quark, which until now we'd all assumed was the noise made by the subatomic duck.
How on earth... Has Richard had his question?
Time has passed.
It hasn't
reached... My daughter used to write in her essays when she was four, and so we skip on. Miles, see what you make of this.
Well, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land.
Well, that was Leonard Nimoy singing If I Had a Hammer. And your question is, why is that fun? Your question is, Miles, what third man is coming under the hammer?
Ah, yes, it's one of these strange celebrity auctions. Kim Philby's...
Right.
Bric-a-brac are coming up for sale.
Yes.
And he's selling secrets after death. What a man. His widow in Moscow is strapped for cash, and she sent all his stuff... The gum boots and the fishing rods and everything.
Philby's Trilby was one of those.
Yes. So either Sotheby's or Christie's, I can't remember. Sotheby's. And they're going to sell it. And people are saying, this is absolute rubbish. He shouldn't be allowed to sell things for gain. And as he was doing it all his life, I don't see why he should stop now.
It's a case of going, gone to Russia. The lot includes a rare photograph signed personally by the Queen. It reads, "Love and kisses, Sir Anthony." Senior government ministers have denounced the sale as being offensive, unlike the machine parts it sold to Iraq, which are, of course, purely defensive. Alan, who are getting a pretty rough deal from the Square Mail?
Oh, it's not going to be the exploding goats.
The what? You come in here...
Malaysian Airways. A Malaysian Airways flight Malaysian had to Airways re-land flight. At Kuala Lumpur, right. Because the fire alarm had gone off. Because there was a party of goats on board. I suppose the rest of the people had bought Hoovers or something. Anyway, it's one of those flights. And they did whatever it is that goats do and generated an enormous amount of heat, and all these sprinklers went off and the plane went down again. Square Mail. Oh, it's not Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
I thought we couldn't comment on that. That's
we can now,
can we say it?
Yes.
Well, these villains who've moved into... A bunch of people have moved into the old Daily Telegraph building, but nobody ever sees them because they've got to turn up there at 1 minute past midnight and stay there till midnight the next day, strapped to their desks. And this excites them inordinately because the rest of the time they're dealing with things like German bonds and all those words that get you going if you haven't seen a woman for months. And apparently a woman came into the Telegraph building and the entire staff of Goldman Sachs, all bondies and things, fell on her, tore her limb from limb. I'm telling lies because he said it was all right. But anyway, this woman was sexually challenged by thousands of bankers.
Yep, you got it. Holy
what
cow.
Are these words that are sexually arousing if you haven't seen a woman for months?
Cucumber. One.
Money.
The old boys' network has always been turned on by short skirts, stockings and suspenders, and now they want their female staff to wear them as well. At the end of round three, the scores have changed slightly because Richard and Miles have 10, but Alan and Pete have limped into the lead with 12. We begin the last round with a tale from the Sunday Mirror.
A football fan found himself standing next to John Barnes. "Are you John Barnes?" he asked. "Yes," said the Liverpool star man. "John Barnes, who plays for Liverpool?" Again, Barnes agreed. Then the fan added, "Then do you know Ian Rush?" Becoming impatient, Barnes replies, "Yes, I know him very well." "Then why don't you bloody well pass the ball to him?"
Thanks to James Clifford of London for that. When the merriment dies down, Richard, see if this helps you at all.
La sausage pie est appétissante et délicieuse avec viande chaude et froide, poisson, jambon, fromage et salade. Elle est également excellent pour enrichir la saveur des soupes.
That was the sauce, La Sauce HP, sung by Marty Feldman. Your question is, where has a saucy band got them browned off? Saucy
Are they
band.
Selling HP sauce in Sainsbury's in Calais, and all these people are going there?
A bizarre thought.
To buy it in bulk.
This is the
Sun who've been cheesed off, I think, isn't it? Because the Harvester family restaurants have refused to stock brown sauce because it's common as muck. And they won't have it. Even though the same chain that owns the Harvester also owns the Savoy, where they will serve brown sauce. So the Sun wrote an editorial about brown sauce.
The Sun wrote an editorial.
They copied it off the bottle, obviously.
So I think it was a veiled attack on John Major, personally. Anyway, you're absolutely right, and you get bonus points for that. This is all about the Harvester restaurant chain, which no longer has brown sauce on their tables. Someone must have found the J cloth at last. While we're on the subject of haute cuisine, Brian has a tale from the Chamral News.
Chef Tony Pierce, formerly of Llangoed Hall in Brecon, is one of the country's brightest young talents and is set to make Ynysheer Hall one of Wales' top eating places. From the outset, Tony showed a natural flair and talent, leaving college with two prizes for outstanding achievement. His first taste of Wales was at Sir Bernard Ashley's hotel, Llangoed Hall in Brecon, where he spent 2 years discovering the wealth of fine products Wales has to offer. Tony presents his food with love and care, and his cooking succeeds by mixing finesse with real guts.
Then enjoy that in Wales. Thank you, I think, Gwenllian Ashley of Dafydd. Well, I got Ashley right. Pete, who was saved by taking the plunge in reverse?
For once, this was a good story, some good publicity at last after all these years for the Skoda, which plummeted from a great height. And yet the driver miraculously survived. And it was only an A-reg. I mean, fantastic.
Yes. That's about the top and bottom of it. It's all about minicab driver Kevin Slaughter, who drove off a 150-foot cliff.
Names like this do this on purpose, do you think?
But was saved because he was driving a Skoda. The official explanation for Mr. Slaughter's lucky escape is that the impact was reduced because the Skoda had a rear engine. But it must also have lost a bit of speed by stalling 3 times on the way down. How unfair. I think they've suffered enough. Skoda say they're very happy their car saved Mr. Slaughter, especially after the commercial failure of their convertible model, which couldn't be left parked in the street as people kept arriving in the night and dumping old sofas. Finally, Alan, what policy decision caused the winners losers to lose out?
This is not Shergar.
It is Shergar.
Oh, well, that is awful. We started off with a tragic story. It's another tragic story.
It is a tragic story.
Which is now 14,000 tins of catter meat, cannot be proved dead. And Fire Auto and Marine that have insured this horse will not pay out.
Right.
£20 million to its owners, because although if it was still alive, it would be 140, they say we need evidence that it's dead. We'd like its head to turn up in an IRA brigadier's bed or something. Some sort of concrete evidence of this. But it isn't. The only concrete evidence is all over the country tabbies are being sick.
Well, they should go down the cash and carry, buy a few dozen tins, take them round the insurance and say, let's pick the bones out of that lot, shouldn't they?
Shergar was syndicated by the Aga Khan, maker of the finest solid fuel stoves in the Middle East. The kidnappers only ever made one demand for 100 grand plus 50 quid to cover sugar lumps and a carpet cleaner. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team's brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yes, it's to do with a curious oldie, Barry.
Oh.
It's in the Daily Mirror. It says, a woman aged 102 has been arrested for the 13th time in Cleveland, Ohio, for peeping on courting couples. Catherine Bernard got so excited, her dentures fell out.
Miles, what have you brought?
This is from the Daily Sport, a paper new to me. I asked all the papers to be delivered. This came in a brown paper bag. Carpenter Raymond Charles, 37, of Jackson, Alabama, U.S., accidentally shot a 1.5-inch nail in his own head from a nail gun, but didn't find out till he tried to take his hat off.
Pete.
excuse me. I've got one that I found in the personal column of Time Out Listings magazine. And this reads, single man, 32, slim, attractive, sensual, seeks similar man, 25 to 35, for fun, affection, possible long-term relationship. No gays.
it doesn't name the MP, then. Alan.
I got an ad too. It's from the Articles Wanted column in The Field.
Oh.
It says, wanted for cash, a child's three-quarter violin, also good quality 12-bore shotgun in case.
I thought you struck a note there. Well, thank you all very much indeed, and particularly our studio audience. Now let's look at the final scores, which are... Oh, Richard and Miles scored 13. Well done, chaps. But Alan and Pete have scored even better, 17. This week's winners. Before we go, there's just time for this, sent to us by Mr. D. Cox of Benfleet from the Southend Area News.
There were red faces all round when a woman arrived at Rayleigh Police Station on Saturday to have her car fingerprinted after a theft. The policeman who took her earlier phone call, PC Ken Elliott, recorded the theft of a box of bras and knickers. When the victim arrived, he asked her, was it just bras and knickers taken, madam? The woman looked at him in disbelief. Not bras and knickers, she said. I'm a confectioner. It was Mars and Snickers.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Miles Kington and Pete McCarthy. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Diane Massax.